The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money, with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is in the house today. Hey, Dugger.
Hey, good evening, I should say.
Yeah, right. We're going to have a good one today. A lot of information that we have to spew out over the next 43 minutes of talk time. And you would know that if you go to the website, WGCLradio.com, and check out the show. You'll know it generally lasts exactly 42 to 43 42 minutes. A little trivia question.
Very good one, too. Yeah. How much commercial time is taken?
My guess is it'll never come up.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do a little bit of news of the week brought to you by the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, supported by us here at Comprehensive Financial Consultants. If you want to learn more about Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, go to mcshof.com. And I've heard Glass say that differently, so I'm not sure that's right. So what I would do is Google Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. You can see who is going to be inducted this year, all about the banquet and more. All right, let's start putting some things into perspective. Historically, from a historic standpoint, since 1950, there has been 59 different 10-year periods. You know, like 50 to 59, 51 to 60, 52 to 61. You get it. 2008 to 2017. The S&P 500 index has produced an average annual return of less than 7% during 15 of these 59 rolling decade-long periods. 19 of the 59, 32% of the time, resulted in an average annual return of at least 14%. So, folks, when you see these averages of 10% over the last 50 years, it doesn't come in a straight-up line. Now, is this just a crazy fluke? On the day that Janet Yellen was sworn in as Fed chair back in 14, the S&P was down 2.3% that day, the worst trading day of the year. On the day that Jerome Powell was sworn in as Fed chair, the S&P was down 4.1%, the worst trading day of the year. All right, we have 48% of the Treasury debt at the end of last year that has a maturity of 3 years or less. So basically, the debt will either mature by, September of 2020. And the Treasury Department says this debt will either be rolled over or paid off.
Okay.
When I read that, I thought...
rolled over or paid off.
Yeah, right. Okay.
3 years to do it, too. That's pretty classic.
The top 10... I had to say that. The top 10% of U.S. taxpayers, based on 2015 data, reported adjusted gross income of at least $138,000. They received 47% of the AGI overall, and they paid, folks, 71% of all the federal income taxes. That comes from the IRS. All right. Cost of borrowing. The average interest rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage jumped to 4.32% last week. That's the highest level we've seen since December of 16. That comes from Freddie Mac. And, of course, folks, when you watch the 10-year Treasury, that's what will indicate the rates of a mortgage. So when you see the 10-year jump from, let's say, 2.5 to 2.8, then you just, know that your mortgage rates are going to go up as well. Hey, some good news. Hourly wages paid to workers in the private sector rose to $26.74 an hour. In January, that's up 2.9% from last year. This last time private sector wages grew this much on a year-over-year basis was in May of 2009. Doug, we've not seen wage increase for a long, long time. That comes from the Department of Labor.
Right.
And lastly, will you please quit calling and asking, when is my 1099 going to be out? Now, this isn't just us. It's every firm.
Every firm.
Your 1099s for your W-2 at work, or maybe your 1099 for doing some work for someone like a contractor, that went out more than likely the end of January. If you had an IRA and you took distributions, you more than likely already have your 1099. But if you have an investment account that has mutual funds or has stocks or bonds or UITs or ETFs, anything like that that's not in a retirement account, those usually don't go out until at least the 15th of February. We just had a notification from one of our custodians that they're going to send some out on the 15th of February, another tranche out on March 1, and another tranche out on March 15th. So it's not uncommon that you don't have these 1099s until even the middle of March. Just a little, I don't know.
Take a breather.
Stand back.
On their way.
Look for the mail to come in. Trust me, it'll eventually show up. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, understanding volatility. Obviously, this week, finishing on Thursday, the fifth straight up day in a row, we're covering all of the losses for the year. We're actually up and positive for 2018 now. But we want to give you a little perspective on just understanding volatility. When we come back, this is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, folks, after months and months of relative calm, the market fluctuations that we've been seeing have many wondering what's happening to the economy. I mean, last week, the S&P, the Dow, everything went down about 5% or more. Even the international markets were down about 6%. And these losses, they pushed all the four indices into negative territory for the year. So now, in addition to the weekly performance that included all this volatility, stocks had massive fluctuations within days. And, you know, one day after another, we were seeing these massive swings. In fact, the Dow, for example, lost over 1,000 points twice during last week, but also gained over 300 points twice. So during times like this, viewing events in their proper context is what's imperative. I mean, this week, we're going to go kind of beyond our typical market updates that we have Rod do, and Doug and I are going to kind of talk through this in an effort to provide you with some clarity and perspective. Now, some analysts, analysis, I should say, on the recent market turbulence. Since the market started in 2018, of course, with wind in their sails, we watched the indices continue their nearly straight-up movements that we had from 2017. And then after the S&P 500 had its best performance in January since 97, stocks took a dive at the beginning of February. On Monday, February 5th, the Dow and the S&P both lost more than 4%. NASDAQ's drop wasn't quite that bad. The next day, all three indices posted positive returns. The volatility continued throughout the week. And then on Friday, February 9th, the indices recovered most of their losses, but each ended the week down more than 5%. Now, like I mentioned, as of Thursday, we've had five straight up days, and that puts us into positive territory for the year. So had you gone to sleep on New Year's Eve and just woke up, you'd say, oh, hey, Duggar, yeah, we're up a little bit. Not much, up a little bit, but you didn't realize the ride we took to get here. So we understand how unnerving these fluctuations can feel, especially as headlines, you know, shout out these fear statistics, fear-inducing statistics. Our goal, obviously, here on the show is to help you better understand where the markets stand today and how to apply this knowledge to your own financial situation. So let's put the markets into perspective a little bit, or at least performance. When the markets post dramatic losses or whipsaw back and forth, a lot of people wonder what's causing all this stuff. What's causing the crazy market gyrations? They might assume that negative financial data is to blame. But however, the recent sell-off that we had last week and the week before and the volatility don't have the culprits that you might expect. I mean, we had no economic update or geopolitical drama emerge to spur the sell-off back on February 5th and 6th. Instead, we may have seen emotion-driven investing combined with maybe computer-generated trading that kind of fueled the declines. And, Doug, we have to make stuff up to explain why markets do that. I say it's kind of like explaining why gas prices went from, you know, $2.50 a gallon to $2.80. I have no idea, but we can make reasons up.
Sure, absolutely. And when you think about that, the very first sentence you said there was, what's happening with the economy? To your point, really, we weren't hearing any bad economic news. It was just, but, you know, I think everyone has kind of been looking and wondering and watching for this correction. And we, once the selling began, I think, you know, sometimes selling just begets selling. Right. And people were unwinding some gains, and now here they are back into the other direction.
I mean, like you said, the recent and latest labor report showed wage growth was picking up. We just reported on that, more than expected. But then we started worrying, I guess, the markets did, about increasing inflation. Mm-hmm. Higher wages can mean companies obviously have to raise their prices to support labor costs, and that's a cycle that can cause inflation to grow and then basically could cut into profits, which then would lower the stock prices. So you get that. But concerns about inflation and interest rates may be to blame for the market movements, but it may not be the only detail to focus on. Another key point that's really important is just understanding that volatility is normal. I mean, in fact, since 1980, the S&P 500 has had an average correction each year of about 14%. But in 2017, the markets were unusually calm. So it was 17 that was the unusual year, not what we just saw a few weeks ago or last week. In 17, the markets only fluctuated about 3%. But before this recent decline, the S&P had gone more than 400 days, that's a long time, without losing at least 5%. That's the longest span since 1950. So the takeaway, markets fluctuate, and the recent lack of volatility is what's truly unusual. And the other thing, you need to focus on percentages, not points. I mean, obviously, when the Dow says it moved 1,000 points, like back on February 6th, and it's the highest decline in history, that statement is true, but it leaves out a pretty key detail. The higher the index goes, the smaller a percentage it is of the total points it represents. In other words, 1,000 points doesn't have the same impact at 25,000 as it does at 10,000. So the takeaway, Doug, is to focus on percentages, not points, to gain a clearer view of market performance.
Absolutely. And David, you know, when we think about what is a bear market, what is a bull market, we've been teaching in our class about how these different things work. The bull, obviously, the horns are going up, the bear, it swats down. And people had kind of been expecting this, looking for it, but the percentages really make a big difference, not the points. And you know, it's interesting, it goes either way, right?
Right.
You can also say I've earned 10% or I've lost 10%. What does that mean dollar-wise, not number-wise?
I think when you talk dollars, it's better to use dollars.
Exactly.
I remember back in the old days, we would do risk tolerance questionnaires, and we're actually going to give some people some ideas on what questions are asking these and what they really mean later. We would say, okay, if the market went down 10% today, what would you do? This, this, or this? This. Okay, what if you had $100,000 invested and you lost $10,000 the next month? What would you do? This, this, or this? Well, they would answer it completely different, putting real numbers
Real numbers.
It. Right.
Yeah, we had a person who had about a $500,000 rollover and said, oh, yeah, I could certainly lose 10%. It was $50,000.
Whoa.
I don't know if I've ever, you know, how often I've made that much in a year. And so when you make this all equivalent, that's what people need to be most aware of, dollars, percentages, or numbers.
The other thing I want to talk about is just recovery from bad days. I mean, the S&P fell 4% on February 5th, but then within one day, it regained almost 2%, and then on the 8th, it lost another almost 4%, then gained back almost 1.5% the next day. I mean, this performance surpasses, you know, historical data. If you analyze the S&P 500's 15 worst days where the index lost on average of 8% or more, stocks were still in negative territory a day later. But in 13 different instances, stocks were back up within a year by over 20%, and then they remained in positive territory in the 5 years following. So the takeaway there is, even when stocks lose more ground than they just did, they tend to recover, and positive performance usually returns. And just, let's remember the last correction. I mean, back in August of 11, the S&P lost 6.66% just in one day. But at that time, Doug, you remember we were talking about the European debt crisis was in full swing. The U.S. had just lost its AAA credit rating. The financial sector was reeling. So volatility measures indicated that most people were becoming worried. Facing that situation, impulses to leave the market and avoid further losses, that's what could have happened. And that's often the case. So, however, but staying invested pays off. Only a year later from that August 11th, the S&P had gained over 25%. So, Doug, again, we've said it so many times, it's almost boring anymore, but it's not the timing in the market, it's the time in the market that really matters. So, really, knowing where to go from here. Over short periods of time, the market trades on fear, anxiety, greed, and obviously emotions. But over the long term, economic fundamentals definitely drive the market. And thankfully, we've had a variety of indicators and fundamentals that have come out to say we're fine. The market's fine. Labor market's good. Corporate earnings. The majority of S&P 500 companies have reported fourth quarter results. They beat their estimates, top and bottom. The service sector, the latest reading from the non-manufacturing index, which tracks performance and expectations for the service sector businesses, hit its highest level since 2005, actually. And consumers, the most recent data indicates the personal income and spending are on the rise. So as you try to determine whether inflation is on the rise and higher interest rates are right around the corner, volatility could certainly continue and be expected. Not just it could, it to be expected. And after last year's smooth sailing in the markets, these fluctuations may feel harder to withstand. But the reality is equities don't move in a straight line. So even if volatility is here to stay, which I think it is, at least back to normal volatility, we know that price changes can provide new opportunities. I mean, we agree with many of the economists out there who assert that the more economic growth that we have will ultimately be a tailwind for equities, not a headwind. So as we always do here on the show and we do in person with our clients, we encourage you to focus on long-term goals rather than short-term fluctuations. And as you do, you avoid allowing the emotions to derail your plans. And we also obviously want you to feel comfortable with whatever financial situation you're in, but we also want you to have perspective and understand. And Doug, I will say that to the credit of our clients, if you're listening, thank you. Thank you, thank you. We had very few phone calls worried.
Absolutely. I can think of maybe two, and one of them calls every week anyway.
Is it your mom?
No.
No, but I do say thank you. But I also told someone, no. I mean, I was at a wrestling meet, and they go, I bet your week was busy. And I go, not any busier than normal.
Right.
I said, either our clients are really trained to understand that the money that they're going to need in the next year, we have that money sitting in safer and secure investments. It's the money they won't need for later is in the more volatile equity side. So that now, soon, later approach must be resonating with people. They must believe it because certainly we're kind of like the utility company. No one calls them as long as your lights turn on.
That's right. Nobody wants a cold shower in the dark. They'll get
you kind
really
of resemble that this past
that.
Week.
I did, yes.
All right, man. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, what's next up? All right. So last week I talked about how we hate losing two times more than winning, and we've been watching a lot of Olympics lately. I have a little more commentary on that. And I listened to a little bit of last week's show, and I said that correctly early in the show and then late in the show. I was mixing up my words. So when you do radio live, occasionally you trip on your words, but in my head I was saying them correctly. Ask my wife. I do it all the time. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Duggar, have you been watching the Olympics at all?
I have been, absolutely. And I got to see Chloe Kim win, the 17-year-old girl won the half pipe. What a neat thing to
see.
She
qualified at 13, was too young to compete.
Yeah, 17 years. And then the flip side to this, David, and this is good news for people like you and I, not that we're going to be in the Olympics in a few years.
Unless they put retirement income planning in.
That's exactly right. We might win that
They
one.
Might almost ditched wrestling.
Exactly. But it's also interesting watching the articles about people who are the oldest winners of gold medals along the way, too. So we have people of 17. And I, this isn't old, but people who
it's
are
old.
In their mid-30s and things like that are winning gold, too. So it's pretty interesting, the wide span that's going on.
You don't see anyone close to 50 that's actually standing up there on the podium. So, Doug, last week we talked about investor behavior, and I tried to equate it to the Olympics in that it is statistically true that human nature is that we hate to lose two times more Then we, that's this is a live radio, so my phone just went off. Sorry about that. Yeah. So then we do winning. And, you know, if you think about, okay, I have $100,000 invested and I lose 10 grand, I hate that two times more than I would making 10 grand.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense? So I've been really watching these people on the podium. And you think about who's the happiest person, right? Who's the happiest person on the podium? It's obviously the gold medal winner. And then you think, okay, who's the second happiest? Well, it's the bronze, because the bronze crawled up on that podium to make it on. The person that's most miserable typically is that silver. And if you watch their faces, It's absolutely true, because they maybe were that close to winning the gold, but they lost the gold. Even though they have silver, they hated it two times more than winning. So I've found that pretty interesting. And I'm talking now about, you know, when you think about investing and kind of going back to losing money, we all hate it. We no one wants to lose any money. And in fact, when I tell people, think about your money in different buckets or pools, you know, money you need now is in the bank, money you need soon is in more fixed guaranteed. Later, 10, 15 years down the road, put it in equities. Even when the later bucket goes down, you don't like it, but at least you understand it. So that's, again, kind of coming back to investing more with a purpose. And I thought it would be nice if we talked about risk tolerance, because we do talk about investing with a purpose, but then obviously at some point on that later bucket, that has to be invested with some kind of risk tolerance, you know, at least some cognitive approach when it comes to that risk. So, and if you'd like me to send your risk tolerance questionnaire to take one, we can just go over to CFCI.us and we will send you one. Most of these volatility analysis or risk tolerance questionnaires, they have some pretty goofy questions.
They do.
You know, if
they
you had a chance to spend money to go mine for gold, but I thought I'd throw out a few just so you could see what they do. So when do you expect to start needing the money? I mean, is it 1 to 5, 5 to 10, you know, 10 to 20, 20 to 25, 30 years? What's interesting, when you go through a risk tolerance questionnaire, that's the most heavily weighted question of all, is when do you need the money? So if you need it next year, you score like a 1. If you don't need it for 30 years, you score like a 10. So at the end, you add up all these points, and wherever the points kind of put you is where you end up. So if you answer that question alone, that I don't need it for 30 years, and you answer the next 6 questions as very conservative, you're still going to end up as a moderate type of investor. Then you're asked questions like, if you had 10 or more years to go, what would you expect from your investments? To outpace the market, keep pace with the market, trail the stock market, but still make a modest profit, have no effect of the market. You know, if you don't want no effect in the market, then you're going to be a 1. If you want to outpace the market, you're going to be, you know, a 6 or 7. I feel comfortable with investments that go up and down over time if they offer the potential for higher returns. You know, agree, disagree, somewhat agree. You know, again, if you disagree strongly, then you're going to get a 1. Well, suppose the market performs unusually poor over the next 10 years, and there have been 10-year periods of time where the market's not done well. What would you expect your investments to do? Lose money? Make nothing? Make a little? Be a little affected by what happens in the market? Once again, answering these questions help you develop a risk tolerance. And I will tell you that risk tolerance changes. I would take one every year or two. When the markets are going great like last year, if you answered these things, everyone would be growth.
Yes.
Now, you know, go through a little volatility, or maybe ask the same questions in 08. When you were down 40%, people's answers were different.
Conservative.
Yeah, conservative. I don't want to lose any money.
Yeah.
So you add up all these numbers, and at the end, if you have a high number, then you're going to be aggressive. If it's somewhat in the middle, it's moderate, and then you have conservative. And that really will, I think, Doug, do a pretty decent job of helping you mold what that later bucket looks like. But I won't think it's important to say, what is a balanced investor or a moderate investor?
Yeah, well, oftentimes people, when we buy and look at balanced investments, they're thinking it's a 60-40 or a 65-35. What I would tell you is a balanced strategy is not just a hard, fast rule of percentages, stocks versus bonds, but also the ability to move more heavily into cash and to have more of a go-anywhere approach. When we see go-anywhere strategies, they tend to have a little bit better downside protection, simply because you just don't know when, like in 2008, the bond market can have some trouble, not as serious as the stock market, but the bond market can have trouble too. So when we think about balance, right, remember the old balance, the weighing machines and all this,
right.
It gives us kind of a warm feeling. Everything is balanced, and have a balanced life, a balanced diet, a, you know, work play balance, and, you know, balance, we use the word balance for everything. And so there's this illusion of balance out there, that if I just have enough of this and enough of that, that everything is going to be smooth.
And
but the reality is that that kind of strategy, though it's steady, it's very hard to maintain perspective when the markets are raging high and you're balanced. And other times, though, when the markets are really struggling, a balanced strategy may look good. The thing I would tell you about balanced strategies is that it tends to keep people invested as long as they don't buy the blurb, chase the returns, and things like that. But it is a very balanced scenario between several different asset classes.
You're the king of balanced investors. You've been well,
I read a book one time called Low Risk Investing, and this man described the reality of over 10, 20, 30 years, who would have been better off, the person that bought a balanced strategy and stuck with it or someone who was always chasing in and out. But I want to say one other thing about these questionnaires that we're talking about. One of the things that is oftentimes lost in this is that a really interesting habit for a married couple is to do their own risk tolerance questionnaires, because a husband's risk tolerance may be much different than their wife's.
Oh, they usually are.
And they usually are. And the expectations of when money is needed, how much risk to be taken, that can really throw a real wrench into a long-term plan if couples don't have the same risk tolerance questionnaire in front of them. Take it and see where the couple is, not just where one of them is.
Just today, Doug, I had a couple in. I slid both of them a risk tolerance, 10 questions. They took them both. Hers came back conservative. I mean, just like no loss, safe. His was more what you would expect. Yeah, I'll take some losses, gains, whatever. And you have to blend those two together.
You have to.
So we talked about it. We came to the middle on things. I said, here's what you don't want to have happen, Phil. You don't want to just say, listen, trust me, it needs to be this way, and she says, fine, do whatever you want to do. Kind of sounds like my house. And then we have a major crash, and guess what she's going to say? Phil, I can't believe that you let us lose all this money.
Exactly.
So you definitely need to be sensitive to both parties. And you're right. I don't know whether it's a gender thing or not, but typically it seems like the female is a lot more conservative when it comes to money and investing.
And they typically tend to be better long-term investors, too.
Absolutely.
All the studies show.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to give Duggar credit for this, but what should be focused on more in retirement? Is it your net worth or is it your net income? So when we come back, we'll talk about that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, before I forget, if you want to come, and we really want you to come, to the Bloomington South Presents An Evening with Bob Knight on February 28th. It's a Wednesday night at 7 p.m. $25 can be purchased online at bhssknight.eventbrite.com. That's bhssknight.eventbrite.com. We'd love for you to come. All the money goes directly to benefit Bloomington High School South kids group, teacher groups, and all that. So we think we have several hundred people already signed up to come. I know we are a lot of last-minute people here in this community, sign up at the very last minute. So we encourage you to do that and spend an evening with Coach Knight, hear what he's been up to, hear old stories. Bob Hamill will be the moderator. And, it's on a Wednesday night. So what else do you have going on except maybe an early church service? So we'll have to get you out and get you over to Bloomington South. All right, Doug, I have a question for you.
Yes.
What's more important, net worth or net income? Before you answer that, last year, a big financial services firm asked working Americans, if you could choose between a lump sum of $500,000 or a monthly income of $2,700 at retirement, which would you make? 62% said they would take the $2,700 a month. Figuring on a 20-year retirement for today's 65-year-olds, $2,700 a month comes to about $648,000 by the age of 85. So why did nearly 40% of the people surveyed pick the lump sum over a stable monthly income? Well, maybe it's the instant gratification of the psychology common to like a lottery winner, played the thing and get a big bunch of money. Or maybe they ran some numbers and figured that the $500,000 would grow and exceed $648 in 20 years if invested. But there's certainly no guarantee of that, and maybe they felt their retirement would last less than 20 years, as was the case with many of the people that were surveyed. They said, well, my parents didn't live 20 years in retirement. But I can tell you this, folks, this is an old one, but a good one. You cannot take growth to the grocery store and spend it. You need income. And Duggar, we have focused in America on net worth, not probably nearly enough on net income.
That's exactly right, Dave. And we've been beating that drum for several years now. I'm thinking of the commercials that we see out there with people with a number under their arm, and they're walking down the street, or they're riding their bicycle, and all the commercials, you need to have 2 million, 3 mm-hmm. million. You know what? We know people who have excellent pensions, Social Security, and different types of guaranteed income streams who don't have as large of a nest egg, who are in better shape than people who have very large nest eggs and very volatile income requirements. And I just have to tell you, in America, everyone should write this down, listen to this. Here's a gem of wisdom. In America, we focus so much on net worth that we've not clearly identified net income. And that's why, David, people get right down to it when it comes to retirement. They don't know how much they need. They don't know what they can withdraw. They don't know what's going on.
Guaranteed lifetime income is obviously in demand here in America. And from Greenwald and Associates, they did some research. 41% say just having enough money to last their lifetime is the most important thing. 25% said the number one thing, remaining financially independent. 12% staying in their own home. But when you looked at who is the happiest in retirement, and keep in mind, folks, there's 10,000 people still a day turning 65 in America that's going to continue all the way till about the year 2050, something, mm-hmm. a long time. People are going to want this. I used to say this a lot, that as I, and you just kind of said it, but as I've observed people in retirement for the last 24 years, and I look at those that seem to have the most comfort, the most pleasure, the most happiness, they tend to have these four things. They tend to have a strong faith. Mm-hmm. They know that there's something beyond this world for them. They have a great family that's connected and not disconnected, mm-hmm. and not shunned or forgotten. They have friends that they stay connected to. They go to dinner. They play cards together. They go to movies, maybe vacation. So you have faith, family, friends, and Duggar, the last one, a fixed income stream.
Yeah.
And that maybe is a pension, maybe it's an mm-hmm. annuity stream, whatever it might be. But when they don't have to worry about what's happening in the markets, that they know when they open their mailbox on January 1, February mm-hmm. 1, and March 1, there's going to be a check in there.
Mm-hmm.
That gives them a lot of comfort.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing we also caution about that is the people who said they wanted $2,700 a month for the rest of their life weren't including inflation. So just because you have a pension out there doesn't mean you don't need to be saving for an inflation hedge along the way, too.
Use the reverse rule of 72 to determine how long it will be before you need to double your money, your income, to buy the same stuff you buy today. What I do is you take the rate of inflation, whatever you think it's going to be, maybe it's 3%, maybe it's 4%, maybe it's 2%, you divide it into 72, and then that tells you how long it will be before you need double the income today or then to buy what things do today. 4%, 28 years, you're going to need to double your income to simply buy the things that you buy today. The other thing that you have to remember, folks, is that living a long time in retirement is a possibility. This comes, again, from Actuaries Longevity Illustrator, whatever that is. I have to.
But you don't have that at home?
No, I don't, but I'm looking at it right now.
Okay.
And they say a 65-year-old married couple has a 47% chance that one of them will live until 95, a 73% chance that one of them will live until 90, and almost a 90% chance that one of them will live to 85. So there's some pretty strong possibilities that you will be living 20, 25, maybe even 30 mm-hmm. years into retirement. So I can tell you again, the happiest people are those that have all the things I mentioned and certainly a fixed income stream. Now, if you don't have a pension, you can create your own.
Absolutely.
There are financial products out there that will allow you to put money in on deposit and then turn around and get a guaranteed income for life, maybe your spouse's life.
And don't forget, David, that a lot of the financial calculators that are out there, they come to an assumption that you run out of money at the end.
Right.
And, success may mean I have $5 left. And so you really want to take a step back and look at where you're at with how you feel about a lifetime income stream or risking having zero at the end.
Or legacy planning. So there's a lot there to think about. But anyway, if you would like a risk tolerance questionnaire, email us at cfci.us. I have a nice article on for retirement, income matters as much as savings, and it goes into some details on how much you should replace of your final salary. Most people suggest about 80% of your final salary. If you've saved and invested consistently throughout the years, that objective should be achievable. And remember, the Social Security replaces about 35% mm-hmm. of most people's income in retirement, and that even if nothing happens with Social Security, which it will, that in the year 2035, I think they're reporting now, that Social Security Trust Fund will be zippity-doo-dah, but you'll still receive 77 cents of every dollar promised on simply the money that's coming into the system. Mm-hmm. So don't panic. They'll get that figured out. I can tell you what's going to happen. They're either going to increase the taxable wage base to about 200 grand. They're going to stretch out Will's, my son's, ability to take Social Security to 70 and certainly not allow him to take it to 62. But remember, the last time they did meaningful change. Now, they did change how these restricted applications and file and suspends and all that did back in 15. But the most meaningful changes happened to those who were either not born yet or certainly weren't able to vote. So don't mm-hmm. worry too much about Social Security. All right, let's take another quick break. When we come back, let's see what's on the agenda, Doctor. I have an outline somewhere. I don't just wing it. I actually may sound like I do. All right, taxes. Okay, yeah. Wall Street Journal article laid out the tax changes very nicely. This week we taught a class at Ivy Tech, and when it came to taxes, I did it. I shook them up a little bit. I'll talk about that if we have time and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, belated happy Valentine's Day to all you lovebirds out there. My wife and I and my son, who I told him he had to go to dinner with us, he was a token of our love,
yes.
went to dinner on Wednesday night. The biggest shock I had was buying a card. I went to a local store, a grocery store, where every other person was, and I bought, and there wasn't much selection, but anyway, I picked up two cards. I typically buy one that's kind of goofy, that talks about, you know, all the goofy things that, mm-hmm. and then I have one that's a little more sincere. So I bought two of them. I get up to the self-checkout, ding, ring it through, and I thought, what am I buying? Ribeye steak?
Yeah.
It was $7.49 for one card.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I questioned my intelligence as I ran number two across there,
mm-hmm.
but I'm like, well, yeah, I'll do it. So $15 in cards, first of all, bought a nice ring for her for Valentine's Day, and yeah, we had a nice time. So happy belated Valentine's Day to all of you out there, whether you have a girlfriend, you don't have a girlfriend, which you may be lucky if you don't. You saved you a few bucks. If you're married, unmarried, whatever. But it was Valentine's Day.
Yeah, yeah.
Most people don't like the commercialism of all that. All right. Doug and I have been actively teaching the retirement readiness classes at Ivy Tech for approximately 10 years. And this spring, you know, called spring winter, has been well attended. We did a class for the Board of Realtors recently. We did two classes for the public, which we're in the middle of right now, where we've had 60-some people come through. And when we get to talk taxes, I walked up to the front of the room and simply said this, folks, the most expensive thing you will have in retirement, bar none, will be taxes. And they all kind of stare at me like I'm dumb. And I'm like, listen, where else does it cost you 30% or more to get your own money? If you want $10,000 out of your account, you have to take 13 or 14 out just to get the 10. Well, now I start getting their attention. Then we talked about how we were in this historically low tax environment. We talked about David Walker, the former comptroller of the United States government, served under both Clinton and Bush, and how he said, not me or anyone else, he said that taxes would have to double to simply pay for the things we've already promised. 76 cents of every dollar we bring currently in to the coffers pay for four things: Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and the interest on our debt. And he said within 10 years, it'll be 94 cents of every dollar. So he just said, hey, taxes are going to have to go up. And from the Government Accountability Office, they went through and said, okay, the bottom bracket has to go from, you know, 10 to 22, and the next bracket up and up and up, all the way up to the highest bracket being 88%. So, Duggar, we talked about that, and then we talked about how we've been there before. 1943, tax rates were 94%, even in the 60s and 70s, as high as in the 60% range. So we've been there before, but we shocked them into at least listening about taxes and how this next 7 years of low taxes were an enormous opportunity to do some things that you know you need to do to get yourself in a better position going forward. But some of the things I know is confusing are all the different tax changes, and I'm going to try to go through this quickly. The Wall Street Journal had a great, well, it's called the New Tax Law Review on February 14th, Valentine's Day. Went through everything from charitable contributions, which, by the way, has not changed that much. You have a doubling of the standard deduction. You can still do a qualified charitable distribution from an IRA if you're over 70 and a half. The gift and estate tax credit is now up to $11 million. So if you have a monster estate, you have $11 million free that can be transferred to your heirs. If you're married, that's $22 million, so a pretty big number there. It's also your annual, lifetime gift exclusion amount. It goes through all of the state and local taxes, how you cannot deduct more than $10,000 of those taxes against your itemized deductions or in your itemized. Mortgage interest, they go through the new caps there. If you have a mortgage now, you're grandfathered, but if you have a new mortgage and it's over $750,000, then any interest above that you would not be able to deduct. They talked about retirement savings accounts. Not much change there, except that the recharacterization of a Roth conversion has gone away. How you cannot deduct things like safety deposit box fees or tax preparation fees or investment-related fees under miscellaneous. Can't do that anymore. A lot of other things that you used to be able to deduct. It didn't affect a lot of people, but some did. You cannot deduct anymore. Obviously, the big winners were in the big news was in the tax rates and the bracket expansions. So they went through all of that. They also went through the expansion of the education plans, the 529 plans. Obviously, here in Indiana, you put $5,000 in, get a $1,000 tax credit from the state of Indiana, best deal going. But they expanded the use of that, so you can use it for pre-K as well as college. Obviously, that's a great benefit, but don't forget that you can do the old put and pull. Put it in, get my tax credit, pull it out, pay for school. So you could do that all the way through and pick up an extra grand. And then they spend a lot of time talking about pass-through entities, which are the LLCs or S-Corps, and how you receive a 20% deduction of your pass-through income up to the 37% top tax rate. So if you make more than the top people, which I don't have the tax rates in front of me, but the I do, I guess. I can flip back a page. It's if you're married, filing joint. Let's see here. Taxable income over $426,000. That's for single, I think. Married, $480,000. Then you would not get that 20% deduction or credit against your other pass-through income. So it's a good article, a really good article for those that just trying to get their hands around it. Look it up. If you can't find it, shoot me an email at cfci.us, and I will... Well, I only have one copy, so first one to ask me for
come
it.
On down.
Come on down.
Have a cup of coffee and you can
Bob
read
Barker
it.
For sure.
Yeah.
I had a good year already, had a fun year already. Markets have been kind of crazy already, which makes it even better. So been a good one. Doug, I appreciate you being on the show. We're going to take
Absolutely.
A quick break because we've got to come back and wrap things up. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for being with us. We got to go. We're out of time. But, hey, we'll be back. Same time, same place. Have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.